Sanusha, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
What is behind Bangladesh's worst bout of communal violence?
Yeah, that seems to have been triggered over the weekend by what some social media and some of the police have articulated towards a picture that started on the 12th of October at the start of the Durga Puja, which is the start of Navaratri, where books of the Quran were found at the feet of the Durga statue. And that just triggered a whole lot of reaction to the question that the Quran was being disrespected. And then this went on to see people become much more aggressive, particularly groups in Bangladesh who felt that that was being used as a disrespectful way to portray the Quran, went on this massive kind of communal attack. But at the same time, I think it has to do with the fact that Bangladesh is one of those countries where I think Sheikh Hasina has been trying for a couple of years to bring back a kind of circular constitution where all religious rights, all religious practices, all religions in itself are recognized, much like what India was after 1947 in partition. But of course, there's been a bit of tension in society where there have been those who didn't want to, sections of the population, groups, etc., who take a much more different approach. Their trajectory is that, you know, it shouldn't have a particular circular identity, but rather a more religious identity. So it's been a difficult time, both for her in the party as well as with opponents outside of the party. But I think this time around, the challenge is really whether or not that those pictures were essentially authentic or were they doctored. And so these rites now where temples have been attacked and people of Hindu faith have been also, in harm's way and so forth, raises questions about how this should go forward as Bangladesh is a kind of circular state, but also raises questions about, you know, the parallels this has with India and, more importantly, the parallels it has in terms of India-Bangladeshi relations.
And North Korea claims that they have tested a new submarine-launched missile.
Yeah, I mean, North Korea is quite an interesting story because for the last several months or more, they've been quite muted in the fact that they have nuclear capability. There hasn't been any testing until about 2 or 3 months ago where there was a ballistic missile test. Some analysts, particularly security analysts in the U.S. as well as in Asia, felt that this was part of the North Korean leader's attempt to show the world that he still is alive, but also that North Korea still has capability when it comes to nuclear attack. So this latest test, I think, keeps South Korea very worried, as well as comes at the end of, or just on the cusp of the engagement that President Biden had reached out to the North Korean leader in terms of talks around nuclear capability. But what's really a bit more scary about this time is that it's unclear whether the tests were done on land or from a submarine. If it was done on a submarine, it shows that the reach of the nuclear missile is much greater and it poses a much greater threat to the Asia-Pacific security architecture. Now, we know that in the Asia-Pacific, and in particular within the Indo-Pacific and within the South China Seas, etc., the nuclear issue, the question of security is very fragile. And so what you're beginning to see is the re-emergence of North Korea into the space raises the stakes on the one hand, but it also creates a new level of instability for South Korea. Of course, the challenge now is whether countries like South Korea will go back to increase their defense spending in nuclear energy, a nuclear military capability. And that means that you have a more serious nuclear arms race in the Asia Pacific now with this new technology launched by the North Koreans. So again, the stability in the region is fragile. Again, the challenge of nuclear armaments and the race against and the race of nuclear armaments is becoming much more embedded, and it seems to implicate and indicate that we are returning to a more strategic, if not a more worrisome, Cold War dynamic of an arms race in the Asia Pacific.
And then finally, India's love for gold has reached fast foods. Tell us about this burger that is causing a storm.
Well, it's a fascinating story that emerged about a day or two ago, where in New Delhi, there's this restaurant that launched this burger, or these burgers that are basically combined edible gold leaf plated burgers. And they come in a different variety of range. It's called the Louis Burger, and I think it's named after the shop. And the Louis Burger has two creations. The one is that it comes with a double beef patty. It comes with truffle English cheddar between two gold top buns and goes for 695 rupees. In dollar terms, that's just under $9.50. And then, of course, that's called the Louis Grand Royal. The truffle cake burger is crafted with shiitake mushrooms. It's truffle mayo, truffle, again, egg, English cheddar, parmesan, and truffle oil. I stand corrected as well. The first one could also be a completely vegetarian burger. And so the second one comes at a cost of about $11.85. Now, this in India is quite interesting because the average daily wage for a household in Mumbai amounts to almost the same in terms of where people earn in their household income parity. But what's interesting about this whole new take on how burgers are being advanced or how burgers are being prepared in India is the fact that gold, which is a natural kind of default strategy where people feel when other commodities are going up in price, you start buying gold as a stockpile and as a default strategy. People are now in India who are really crazy about gold are using the yellow metal as part of their daily diet, eating it as opposed to preserving it and keeping it for the rainy day. So this kind of changes the dynamic of how gold is perceived. But this is not to suggest that in India or elsewhere, gold wasn't part of the palate or part of the food servings that generations and generations in royal houses, etc., used to use. You use gold flakes, you use gold powder. There's also been known that in the 17th century, chefs use gold as part of their way to embellish dishes and impress their masters at state banquets, whether it was kings, royal houses, or emperors. But I do think that at this point in time, when the world is living in a very precarious situation when it comes to income, when it comes to inequality, the fact that we could still have people in the world use gold and actually use gold to try and include it in their diet and include it in their food as a takeaway is quite bizarre, and it's also quite intriguing at the same time.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. As always, Sunusha, really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Take care.